Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Tito's Handmade Vodka is America's favorite vodka for a reason. From the first legal distillery in Texas, Tito's is six times distilled till it's just right, and naturally gluten-free, making it a high-quality spirit that mixes with just about anything, from the smoothest martinis to the best Bloody Marys. Tito's is known for giving back, teaming up with nonprofits to serve its communities and do good for dogs. Make your next cocktail with Tito's. Distilled and bottled by Fifth Generation Inc., Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Savor responsibly.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it again,
it's gone, it's into the bullpen, this game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field, it's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires, swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
All right, let's hit it. Play Tessie, episode 268. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Remember, before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, rate 5 stars. You can find us on WEEI's YouTube channel where you can subscribe to WEEI. Hit the thumbs up on all the Play Tessie videos, which you can find in the Play Tessie playlist. And then find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. We got a full crew today. It's Gordo here with Sammy and Pat, and the Sox, just about 15 minutes ago, finished off a really just a big, big win against the Toronto Blue Jays in the opener of the series. Their magic number, and we're recording this right now while the Astros are playing. So we're going to have this conversation for the next hour. The Astros are in the second inning, so this game's not going to end while we're on this show. And we're probably going to be telling each other live updates of it because it's just going to be relevant to the conversation. Because right now, the magic number on the Guardians is 4 because they won tonight. The magic number on the Astros is 4. That number cannot increase. It can only decrease to 3 if the Astros lose. So by the time you're listening to this, if the Astros lost, it's 3. If they won, it's still 4. And the magic number on the Tigers is 5 because the Red Sox do not hold the tiebreaker on the Tigers. The Guardians and the Tigers thing, they cannot pass the team that wins the division. They can only pass the team that's in the wild card. So to me, I'm still rooting for the Tigers to beat the Guardians. We'll get there in the podcast. But the first and foremost, the important thing is the Red Sox need to win ball games. They're going to need to we talk about these final two series, 6 games. How many do they need to win? 6 wins gets them in, 5 wins gets them in. We figured out even 4 wins gets them in. 3 wins probably gets them in. And now they're 1 win there. They're 1 win down. So if you win 2 of the last 5 games this year, you're probably in. If you win 3 of the last 5 games this year, you're definitely in. So you have to be feeling at least pretty good about what's happening right now. The Sox have won 3 out of 4. We talked about the situation getting out of control. Then last podcast, we talked about it getting back in control. winning this first game of the series with Garrett Crochet going tomorrow for game two against Max Scherzer, who is the easiest pitcher you'll face this series. Nothing against him, but certainly not as good as Gausman or Bieber. You have to feel good about where things are at right now with the Sox, with five to go.
Absolutely. The math dissertation that you gave aside, hard to not feel good this close to the finish line when you're hanging on to a playoff spot and the guys behind you, just talking about Detroit and Houston, not Cleveland, are just scuffling in the worst way. As we speak, like Gordo said, this game, the Houston and Sacramento, almost said Oakland, that game is live. It's 1-0 A's. So we don't know what's going to happen, but the Astros have been struggling. They didn't lead once in their series against the Mariners, their biggest series of the season, not a single lead at any point. And the Red Sox haven't been playing a fantastic brand of baseball or anything for 2 weeks or so, but they're still in a good spot. And we've kind of had our freak out podcast, and then we had our come back down to earth podcast. And now we're kind of in the in-between where we think the Red Sox are going to make the playoffs, but we're not 100% sure. I think I'm at like 85% now. I'm pretty close to being in the 90 range. But yeah, hard to not feel good about it after that game one win against Toronto. Just keep it going. We don't want... It feels so wrong to even come close to celebrating anything without getting in after what we've seen this team do in years past. I won't even reference that season that I'm talking about. But yeah, man, feeling good as I can be right now.
I mean, if we're at the point of year where, like, obviously every game is incredibly important. I don't care what anybody says. There's always that, like, dark part of your brain that is like, I hope we just don't get fucking swept. Like, that kind of creeps in. And I didn't expect them to get swept, you know, against Toronto or Detroit. But there's never not a possibility. So a win tonight on top of everything else going on is so incredibly big. Obviously, ideally, they still control their own destiny. A win tonight does that. They're still, you know, things are still looking good right now. But starting the series off, a humongous series off. On the right foot. It's encouraging. It wasn't great baseball tonight. Story had 2 hours. Still left some guys on. Narvi came through at one point. Nathaniel Lowe came through huge. But yeah, I mean, it started out to be encouraged, but it's like cautiously optimistic. You feel good, but you take with a grain of salt the grand scheme of, you know, the last week and a half of the season.
That's the term I was fishing for. I was cautiously optimistic. I just couldn't think of it, but that's the perfect way to put it. Cautiously optimistic.
The truth of where we're at in the season, and like we have for the most part recorded these podcasts after series, and with baseball, you got to take it series by series. But obviously, once you get to September, it really becomes game by game. But when you're at this point in September, it really becomes game by game, because we're really excited after a big win today. But like, let's say tomorrow the Red Sox lose. Let's say the Astros win this game. Oh, did something just happen? Did the dude just hit a grand slam or something? I don't like this.
No, it's 1-1.
1-1. Okay. Sac fly. I look over and he's pimping it, but it's 1-1. But like, if the Astros win this game and they win tomorrow, the Red Sox lose tomorrow, and like say the Guards win tomorrow, now you're in a pretty sticky situation. Just one day worth of changing really changes the conversation. So it really is about controlling your own destiny, as you said, Pat. Like, you got to win the game in front of you. And to me, the most important game the rest of the way, including today, to get is the one final Crochet game. Like, get that game, lock it in. Hopefully Crochet gives you seven, gives your bullpen a rest. Hopefully you hit a little bit. Don't have to use Whitlock and Chapman. Give your bullpen a little bit of a reset. And that sets you up to do whatever the fuck you want in those final four games. Be as aggressive as you want or as you need to be. And if you don't need to be aggressive, you don't have to be. But it gives you so much freedom if you can lock in a win and save your bullpen tomorrow. It is a little bit greedy to say it, but it really does set up everything for success the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's gravy if you can do that. I mean, today, as we were watching this game, Giolito did not look good pretty much at any point. He didn't look terrible, but he just didn't have his command. The velocity was down from the jump. And then I think it was the second inning, I texted our group chat and said, Cora should get someone up in the bullpen. like get someone going just in case things start to spiral, because they could, and it could happen quickly. And I love that brand of baseball. That this is the shit we wait all winter, all summer, and now we're finally here. There's no sport more exciting than high stakes baseball, where every pitch feels like it's the end of the world, or like every at bat is the biggest at bat of the game. And it's just, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's kind of sort of what today felt like in the game one against the Blue Jays. Not quite there yet, but it's getting there. And that's like being able to think about getting the bullpen up in the second or third inning, even though it's a terrible scenario. When I started thinking that, I was like, yeah, we haven't had this feeling of like, you got to pull your starter in the second inning because you have to win this game because it's important. We haven't had that for years. So I was thrilled about it, even though it was a bad spot at the time to be in. But I guess you got to give credit to Giolito for fighting through it.
No, I mean, didn't have his stuff. He didn't have his stuff. Velocity was down. He's walked, what, three guys? Or was it four? Three or four?
I think it was three.
He looked floppy. Like his body was floppy.
Yeah, he fell like seven fucking times. Yeah, he was very floppy.
Four.
Floppy guy.
Struck out. He flopped on the mound a lot, yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about Giolito for the most part is when he's off, he doesn't go deep into games. He routinely will go kind of under five innings when he's not at his best. He is very good at limiting damage when he's not pitching well. I will give him that. Like, very rarely do you see him complete. The Angels game early in the year was like catastrophic. Like, if I had to put money on a starting pitcher having the worst outing ever, I would have put it on that until Walker Buehler pitched in against the Angels in Los Angeles. But aside from that, like, when he blows up or when he's not good, he's very good at limiting damage and at least keeping it within striking distance. So huge that, you know, he could save the pen a little bit tonight. They still use all the leverage guys, obviously. But it wasn't like they were scrambling using Mats to Slayton to Whitlock to Chapman. Like, you definitely still have some fresh arms out there. But hey, crochet day tomorrow. Gotta like your odds. And it's against Max Scherzer, who kind of sucks. So,
not to divert the conversation, but you brought up Walker Buehler. How fucking annoying is it?
Not that annoying. He wouldn't have done it here. It never.
I know he
happen.
Wouldn't have done
Fuck
it here.
Him. Fuck him.
I cannot. I know he would not have done it here. I don't care. It pisses me off. He's gonna be on a playoff team and he's pitching. Like, come the fuck on, bro.
Conversely,
come on.
Conversely, going back to what Pat said about Giolito, I don't want to hear about fucking Walker Buehler.
I can't.
That Angel start. It's funny,
dude. It was so bad.
I got it right here. 1.2 innings, 8 hits, 7 earned runs, only 1 home run and 1 walk. His ERA was up to 6.42, and people were saying, get rid of him, DFA him, blah, blah, this guy. And that was only seven starts into the season after major surgery. So I guess Giolito, for newer fans or fans who are like casual fans, he's a great example of like some of these guys take time, especially starting pitchers. Like, if you want to pull the plug on a reliever early, all right, whatever. But like that guy, he's come a long way, and I know he's slowing down a bit, but I can't imagine where the Red Sox would be without Lucas Giolito, even when he's not at his best. Just the innings alone, he's been so good.
Well, that's what we should talk about, because you talk about seven starts in, not just seven starts in, he's coming off the internal brace procedure surgery on his elbow, like essentially Tommy John surgery. So those guys even more so, you got to be a little patient with when they're coming back from that. But you also got to factor in, he's thrown a ton of innings. He hit that incentive to ditch that team option on his deal, despite basically missing the first month of the year, which is super impressive and just shows to how trustworthy he's been to eat innings. But as you can see, I mean, the velocity's been down. He's been walking a lot of guys. It's clear he's slowing down. I really, really, really hope that they can clinch the postseason before game 162, because as of right now, he's lined up to pitch game 162 if it matters. And I'm sure if it doesn't matter, they'll let him rest until game 2 or 3 of the wild card series. They can kind of have their pick of the litter of him or Bayo in game 2. But yeah, he's definitely slowing down a little bit. And if the Red Sox can take care of business, get him a little bit of extra rest. I know he said he doesn't like the extra rest, but I think you can see it. Like, he definitely could use the extra rest.
So right now, Giolito, for the guy you got in the bargain bin, like people like to call it because he was hurt at the time, 26 games, 26 starts, 145 innings, 121 Ks, 3.41 ERA. That's a really good player. I hope
he had a great year. Great year.
I hope they can consider bringing him back in for 2026. I think he'll be better. He won't have that buildup, and I think people take for granted how valuable it is to have a guy who's just, you know, not the best starter in the world, but just logs innings, consistent. Pat, you're making a face.
Yeah,
you want Giolito back?
I don't know if I'm sold on it. His metrics, the under the hood numbers, are pretty bad.
Giolito?
You've watched the games, Pat. Like,
no, I know.
He's in full control. He's not getting lucky out there.
I guess I should make that face. I love Lucas is one of my favorite guys on the team personally. He's the man. I think it comes down to number. Any free agent, it definitely comes down to number. Like, would I throw out, you know, 4 for $80 million for Lucas Giolito right now? No, I wouldn't. But, you know, shorter term, you know, 2 years, 45, something like that. Yeah, sure. Comes down to number. But no, for this season, he has done, I think we would all agree, he's done far better than I think any of us had expectations for. He's been great this year.
Yeah, I mean, the overall body of work has been awesome. Like, without doubt, I mean, going into the season, people were like, oh, he could be the number five. Maybe he's not even in the rotation. I remember he did an interview with Bradfoe, and he was talking about having to potentially fight for a rotation spot in spring training, which, with the money he's making, probably shouldn't have to fight for your job. But in the end, he barely ended up pitching in spring training, got his job back when he came back. But where we're at now with him, because yeah, we'll have a lot of time to talk about his free agency, which he is going to hit free agency, and he'll get the qualifying offer and he'll turn it down, barring injury. He's walked 18 guys in his last five starts. Like, where we're at with him, and obviously, like, Connelly Early was awesome in every inning he has pitched besides the first inning of his third start. Kyle Harrison has thrown, he coming off a 6-inning, 1 earned run start, 9 innings, 1 earned run total in the majors for the Red Sox this year. Is there any part of you guys that would even think about changing up your plan for a game three of a wild card?
Absolutely not. Strongest of no's I could possibly give. No way. You have to go with Giolito. If it doesn't work, then you lose. Otherwise, it's no shot.
I agree. I think you give the ball to Giolito on an incredibly short leash. I think you have Tolley, Harrison, you know, you have the piggyback guys ready early. Like, it's a very short leash. Because the other thing, too, is like I kind of alluded to it. He's been very good at limiting damage. That being said, like, if shit gets off the rails, Sammy sent a ridiculous message. If shit gets off the rails early, your bulk guys, whether you like it or not, realistically, they're young rookies. Like, handing the ball over to them, first and second, second and third, man on second, no outs. That's a big ask. Like, that's a humongous ask for the guys who are going to be your bulk guys. So, putting a bow on it. Yes, you go Giolito. It's the shortest leash you could ever put on somebody. Like, if they pull him after 1 2/3, 2 walks, 2 hits, perfect. Take him out. You don't give him any run.
That's where I'm at too, Pat. Like, with Giolito especially. Like, I remember it was his most recent start in Baltimore. He was hitting 95 in the first inning. And I texted the group chat, Giolito's hitting 95. It's going to be a good night. And he threw like 7 or 8 shutout innings or something. It was like the best he's looked all year. Tonight, it was 89 to 92 in the first inning. I mean, you can tell which version of Giolito you're going to get pretty early. I definitely would start him. Like, I asked the question, but my answer is right there with you guys. Like, yeah, he is more than, like, way more than earned the right to have that start if he's healthy. So it's going to be Crochet and Bayo and Giolito getting those 3 games if they play 3 games. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree with what Pat just said. Like, if he's dodging traffic in the first couple of innings, like, you've got dudes who can go multiple innings. You've got dudes like Harrison who came out of the bullpen and was successful. Early could try his hand at it. Tolley could go 2 innings out of it. Like, your bullpen is deep enough to eat a whole game out of there if Giolito doesn't have it. Pat?
The other thing, too, it's years removed, But we do have, this is a guy who has postseason experience. Not lengthy runs, but he has pitched in two playoff games, 2020, 2021. And he pitched fine. The 2020, it's so different. No fans, short season, seven innings, eight strikeouts. And then the next year, he went 4 1/3 and didn't have a necessarily bad outing. But this is a guy who's a veteran of the staff. Like, he is the veteran on the staff, which is crazy, but he is. So you have to instill some confidence in him, giving him the ball. And then also, you got to just trust him. You got to just say, hey, you're making, $20 million this year. You've been there, done that in some capacity. Go out, just give us four good ones. And I think he can do it. I think he can. But it's just got to be, it's got to be on a short leash. Because like I said, those young guys are coming in and taking that ball. That is so much pressure. That is so much pressure.
It's also for a guy who hasn't really gotten that huge contract yet, a playoff performance. Like, we've spoken with Bradfo about this. Like, Walker Buehler made a lot of money pitching in the playoffs in 2024.
A lot of Walker Buehler talk on this pod, yeah. Guys.
None of it good. But like, it's another thing for Giolito. If he, not that he needs added motivation, but that, like, nothing will kick you in the ass. Like, hey, you might have $60 million on the line here, man. No pressure. Also, you're facing the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. So go out there and have fun, pal.
Sam, you brought up a really good point about the whole, because he's going to be a free agent. They're going to probably QO him. But the other thing, too, is like, on, like, we saw it, Walker Buehler kind of got that postseason bump. You're telling me if Giolito has one or two good to great postseason outings and then on paper finishes the year with a sub 3-4, yeah, he's going to make pretty good money.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, at that point, hopefully not from the Red Sox. But that being said, like, he's got a lot on the line, too. This is, obviously he wants to win. He loves this team. The team wants to win. But there is some personal motivation there. There absolutely has to be.
I got a take about the making money in the postseason thing. I know when Bradfo talks about it, he always talks about it like it's a bad thing where guys make a lot more money when they perform in the postseason. I think it makes sense. Like, if I see a guy perform in the postseason, the most important games under the most pressure, if I were a GM or an owner of a team, I would absolutely be willing to pay more for that guy. Those are the games I want my team to be winning and playing well. And like, so I think it makes sense. I've been thinking about this a lot lately.
I'll counter that.
Just like Pablo Sandoval.
Hey, had a good career. The caveat to that is if the performance is completely entirely different from anything you've ever done where it looks like a fluke, all right, different story. But like Walker Buehler, he's been an ace before, he's pitched well before, he looked good in 2024 in the playoffs, like
only in the playoffs.
I kind of get it. Yeah, that's the problem, is only in the playoffs. Yeah. A small sample, hindsight's 2020 though.
My problem with the playoff, with giving guys more money based on the playoffs, especially with pitchers, is because with pitchers, usually it means they threw a shit ton of extra innings and they're getting even less rest in the offseason. Now you're going to give them more money when they've had less rest to prepare to play for your team. Like, good on you for doing good for your old team.
But that's like, that's so short-sighted, though.
It's not, though, because you also
have... It's a one-year deal, sure, but like...
My thing, too, is how can you tell me that a good 2 weeks of baseball in October of 2025, if I'm signing a guy to a four-year deal, is anywhere close to indicative of what he's going to do in 2030.
It's not indicative of what he's going to do in years past, but just shows that this is a guy who can handle the spotlight and has played in the playoffs and had success, which is super valuable.
That counts. You're right. That counts for something.
Might be a hot take.
I do think the detractors are more than the bone, than the good. Pat, go ahead. Sorry. Just had to say that.
Might be a hot take, but I think there's enough evidence. If someone has a great postseason before free agency, I don't think you sign them. Sandoval.
No, come on.
Sandoval. No. Ooh, Madison Bumgarner. Anthony Rendon.
Can I give you the other side of it? Remember when Daniel Murphy broke out in the postseason and went from like mediocre to like a star player for years to come for the Nationals? That was crazy. But you don't see that. Like, that's why that was so, like, that was unheard of.
I don't like, dude, no. No, 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 Pat, I reject that whole premise that you just don't sign a guy. Imagine there's a player you want. Like, imagine there's a player you want. Like, let's say Joe Ryan, let's say the Twins made it to the postseason in this fairy tale land, and Joe Ryan just shoves. Would you be like, oh, I'm out on this guy now? I don't want him anymore.
Okay, sorry.
When you put it that way.
I wouldn't do it. I was going to say, I guess it's based on track record, but like, well, actually, like, Rendon's just a piece of shit. But like, Sandoval was never great. He was a really good postseason player, but he's never great. And then, what do you call it?
Pat, here, stick with Sandoval. Why should, and the Red Sox did this when they signed him, but why should you take the body of work of like what? 20, 30, 40 games of your career in the postseason over hundreds of games that show you who you really are in the regular season. Like, it's a bonus.
No, you don't take it over. It helps. Yes. Yeah, it helps.
For a hitter.
Nah, both.
I don't want my pitchers coming off like 280 inning seasons and now I'm going to pay them a shit ton of money.
If it's 280 innings, that's one thing. But if they pitched 150 and then they throw another 12 in October or like 15, that's whatever. I'm not going to let that. I just think on a very broad way to look at it, if you can perform in the most important time, I think that earns you more money. There are scenarios where it's like, oh.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fuck, this guy threw so many innings, or this guy, you know, maybe not Sandoval, but like if Steve Pierce did what he did, but he was 25 years old, that's a guy I'd be like, okay, I would like him for a bench piece. That was awesome. But like, I don't think that's the real him.
But he wasn't good the next, he wasn't 25.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying it's not always like that, but.
Hand up. I'm fucking stupid. I said I would never pay somebody for postseason alone. Nathan Eovaldi was worth every single penny.
That's fair. So,
yeah. All right.
But he's a guy that didn't rack up a crap ton of innings because he came back in that. What was he like? He came back in like June or July that year, so he didn't have a full season worth of innings plus a postseason. So you feel?
Yeah, but then I could just say he had two Tommy John surgeries. It's like it's case by case. Is at the end of the day, there's no broad way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying.
Everyone's I'm going to move us on to something here because we got to talk a little bit of Guardians Tigers here. They got two more games in that series. Tarek Skubal, holy shit, that inning was crazy. If you didn't watch that inning, basically they like bunted a guy on base and then they bunted and he hiked the ball through his legs trying to get the guy at first base on literally a snap from a center, but it didn't work. It goes all the way into the outfield. They get second and third. No outs, and the Tigers at the time were up 2-0. They scored a run. Then Skubal hits David Fry in the face. The dude's like bleeding out on the field, gets taken off in a golf cart. Then the Guardians tie the game, and then he balks the go-ahead run to third with less than two outs, and he scores on a sack. So, and that was basically the game right there. So where I'm getting with this is, what do you guys want to happen the rest of the series? Right now, the two teams are tied for the division. The Guardians have the tiebreaker over the Tigers, but as it pertains to the Red Sox have the tiebreaker over the Guardians. They don't have the tiebreaker over the Tigers. Tigers won all three games against the Red Sox this year, and if the Red Sox were to tie them up, then the tiebreaker would be moot because they swept the Tigers in the final series. and we're not going to be tied with anybody at that point.
I either want Cleveland to sweep the entire series, or I want the Tigers to win the next two.
Which would you rather?
If I had to choose,
that's two of the three outcomes right there.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I didn't realize ultimate. That.
I want. Oh, here, Sammy. I'll tell you what I want. I either want the Guardians to win both, the Tigers to win both, or for them to split.
I think, honestly, if Cleveland swept Detroit, I feel like the Red Sox could just step on their throats in Boston and just kill them and get into the playoffs and be hot going into October. But there's the whole tiebreaker thing. I don't know. A lot of it depends on Houston, which is weird. Like, a lot depends on what happens with the Astros, because, like, if the Astros lose, Pat almost died. If the Astros lose two out of three to the A's, then I'm like, I don't care what happens with Cleveland and friggin' Detroit. Red Sox are in at second wild card, third wild card. I don't really care either way. They haven't been great at home lately. They've been better on the road, which is weird, which is not indicative of the rest of the year. So I really don't know what's better, home or away, for playoffs right now. Therefore, just get in. I don't give a shit where it is. Just get in. So,
well, Sammy, let me ask you this. Let's say the Astros sweep the A's here. So now you're fully reliant on having to beat one of these two teams.
If the Astros sweep the A's? Okay, so right now, oh, God, that's terrifying. I don't know, dude. See, I don't have an answer.
I think it's an easy answer. I think it's
okay, you tell me. This will help if I hear someone else talk about it.
The magic number is one less against the Guardians than it is the Tigers. So if the Guardians lose two games, that means the Red Sox have to either win two of their last five, or if they only win one of their last five, then they just need the Guardians to lose one game against the Rangers next week. Like, if the Guardians lose both of the next two games, the Red Sox are almost definitely getting in. Whereas if the Tigers lose, I mean, you're probably still getting in, but it is just a little bit harder. Like, I agree, the Tigers are way weaker, but the math is the math. Like, it's math.
Yeah, I kind of want to, like, the Tigers get swept, I feel like the Red Sox could just roll over them. If the Tigers are on a two-game winning streak coming into Fenway. Okay, so I guess I'll go with your answer, because it has the highest likelihood of the Red Sox making the playoffs, even if it doesn't. It maybe doesn't put them in the best spot to be on fire when they come. Who knows? Who knows? I'm overthinking it. I'll go with what you said. I hope Cleveland wins the next two.
Pat, you on board with that? Or you? I see you nodding, but I can't tell if that's like a...
No, sorry, I
loses,
would...
Loses.
I was going to say...
I said that wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope Cleveland loses the next two. Gordon, you pointed out the math just makes it easier for the Sox to get in. The other part of this is I'm not scared whatsoever of the Tigers in the playoffs. Like, Scooble, sure.
No rotation after Scooble.
Scooble, sure, whatever. So obviously they lost tonight as you record. They lost 5-2. Did you guys actually look at any of the numbers from tonight, that game?
Not really.
The Guardians?
The Tigers struck out 19 times.
What?
Yep.
Dude, I mean, Gavin Williams was carving them up. I had it on a side TV, but I definitely did not.
But then they had
19 Ks. Holy crap.
There were three relievers after Gavin Williams. Two strikeouts, struck out the side, two strikeouts. So, like, in my head, the Tigers just aren't an intimidating October team. They're very good. They kind of remind me, like, the Rays from a couple of years ago. Like, they're very good in the regular season. They'll have, you know, Scooble's kind of their Snell. But, like, face-to-face in a prolonged series, five games, seven games, whatever it is, they just don't scare me. Cleveland scares me because they play
young.
Fundamental baseball. They're young. They're smoking hot. They play phenomenal defense. They play small ball. Like, it's everything you don't want to see in the playoffs as a team that cannot play fucking defense.
Well, it's interesting. Like, the Tigers, if the Red Sox, and this is, I guess, where we can go next is – maybe envisioning some potential opponents the Red Sox could face in a three-game series. If the Tigers beat the Guardians and the Sox get the third wild card, it would be, and play the winner of the worst division winner, which would be the Central, would be the Tigers if they get that division. Your one major advantage over anyone you play is that you have Crochet in game one. Having Crochet versus Scooble in game one kind of negates it. But at the same time, having watched Scooble's last few starts, I mean, he hasn't let up a ton of runs, but there's been a ton of traffic. And he not for nothing, like he gets out of those jams because he gasses it up. Like this is a guy, a starting pitcher, who's throwing over 100 miles an hour to get out of spots. So it's not total coincidence, but with the way they're hitting and the way the rest of their staff is performing, like their bullpen shat the bed tonight too. Like Tommy Canley had a really good start to the year. He tailed off. Finnegan blew chunks tonight. Like they
he's hurt.
Really have.
And then yeah, he's playing hurt.
Vest blew the game against the Braves the other day. Like there's nothing they can go to.
As things currently stand, correct me if I'm wrong, Tarek Skubal is game 162.
Yep.
Yeah. And if they win, if he's 162, but if they're going to be a wild card team, they'll push him. If they're going to go to the division Agreed. Series, even if they clinch, he's still going to pitch that game because it lines him up with 5 days rest go into game one.
Yeah. So, dude, that's so fucking scary. But Gordo, real quick, one thing you pointed out, since he had that weird rib oblique arm, that he hasn't looked sharp. He's pitched great, like numbers wise, but he hasn't looked nearly as dominant.
Yeah.
So playing that in, yeah, if they go in the division series, then yeah, they obviously they'll pitch him game 162 and give him a full rest. But if they're not, if they're a wild card team, I don't think there's a shot in hell. Yeah.
They'll definitely skip him because he'll be starting 2 days later.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reason Crochet's not going to pitch 162.
It's kind of crazy what's happened. Here, look. Here's a good tweet from Passan. If you're not keeping up with the Tigers, they are in the midst of a genuinely historic collapse. So August 25th, Detroit has a 12.5 game lead over Cleveland. Fast forward to September 23rd. The Guardians beat the Tigers to tie them atop the AL Central. And they have the tiebreaker too, which means they're technically not tied. So this is like historic. This is like the 2011 Red Sox.
Yeah, maybe even worse. Pat,
let's call it worse. Call it worse.
Shout out to TC because he said it on the post game. I think I have this date right. The last time prior to tonight that the Tigers were not in sole possession of first place in the AL Central was April 29th.
Holy crap.
I mean, they were up like what, 15 games, and they were up double digits in September. Like,
yeah. Oh, this is dude, bad as this, yeah. This collapse is so bad that it is overshadowing how bad the Mets collapse would be.
Yeah, that's true.
The Mets had the best record in baseball through like 65 games.
Yeah.
But the Mets, you look at their team, it's less shocking. They have no rotation at all. And the guys they do have played like five games in the big leagues.
Well, you can say that about the Tigers lineup. Like their lineup, even at their best, never looked that great on paper.
Ah, man, you have Green, Torkelson. I feel better with rookie hitters.
Torkelson was a bum up until this year.
What? No, he wasn't. He was awesome last year.
He was like 30. He was empty 30 homers. Or was that 2 years ago?
No, Torkelson.
Dude, he lost
in the minors last year.
This year he's been awesome. He's 31 home runs.
He lost his start. He wasn't even a starter going into this year because they had such little belief in him.
He's 25 years old. He's a 31 home run guy with an 800 OPS. He's really good. And then Green is awesome. There's another guy I'm forgetting.
Yeah. Green is like the one dude in that lineup that I actually like. Kerry Carpenter, I feel like every time I watch him comes through, but like he's like a platoon dude. He's kind of like, I mean, he's not really a platoon. He's like a Willier type platoon. So
he's like Ref Snyder, but lefty. Lefty Ref Snyder, kind of, sort of.
Yeah. And like Glaber's had a good year, but I'm not really scared of Glaber.
Yeah. Glaber's had a really good year.
I don't know.
Dingler's sucks again.
Dingler's good. Dingler's
talking about Dylan Dingler. Like, that lineup is not.
I mean, the Red Sox had Sidon Rafaela hitting six today, man. Everyone's banged up.
Yeah, the Red Sox lineup's bad right now.
Yeah. But if we're comparing. Oh, Parker Meadows. Oh, Wensiel Perez. This friggin' guy. This guy's good.
We're talking Wensiel. Dude. We're talking Wensiel Perez. These are mediocre guys.
I'm saying their lineup's not bad.
No,
Wensiel's been hot lava.
He drove in the first run today when I thought the Tigers might be able to pull it off. But
he's cooled off. He's cooled off. I take it back.
There's nothing in that lineup that scares me. And then when you face a team like, I don't know. Like if the Astros have Yordan out, like the Astros might be one of the lesser scary teams in this bunch, but like if you're facing the middle of the order and they've got Yordan and Correa and Altuve and Jesus Sanchez, I guess, seems scary. Am I forgetting someone? Yiner.
We're talking Jesus Sanchez. Yiner.
You're talking the same thing. You're missing their. You're missing their best player, Jeremy Pena.
Jeremy Pena is, yeah, he's like fifth in the league in WAR this year.
He's fucking nasty.
Like that's like four. That's like four guys. You're right. Jesus Sanchez and Yiner Diaz, kick him out. But the other four are legitimate dudes, and the Tigers maybe have one dude.
Yeah, I think Tigers have two. I'd give him three. I think Glaber's underrated. I think Torkelson's really good. And then Riley Green is like on the verge of being a legit star. It's like the Red Sox. Top three guys right now.
Riley's a stud.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about the Astros. Because like, yeah, like sure, Correa's back, but he's older. Altuve's still good, but he's older. Pena was on the team that beat that Phillies team. But like, they don't have Tucker. They don't have Bregman. Yennier Cano has not been good. There's definitely a lot more holes.
Who are you talking about there? Yennier Cano? He's the Oriole reliever. Who are you thinking of?
Not Yennier Cano.
Diaz. Oh, are you talking about the guy
Yiner
who
Diaz.
Just...
He's talking about
Yiner Diaz. Yeah.
Yeah. Caratini.
It's just a team... Like it's a team that like, yeah, like there's some guys who are still on the team from like those World Series teams and those deep playoff runs, but a lot's changed with them. Like that rotation does not scare me whatsoever. And it's just like, there's no favorite in the American League and it's crazy.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to ask you guys a question then. Sam, you say your thing and then I'll ask you the question.
I was going to say, we were talking about like who pitches game four for the Red Sox if they get into that scenario. The Astros, they don't even have a game three guy. They have Hunter Brown, who's crochet caliber, Framber, who's
cold,
very good, but slowing down right now. And then it's, dude, Jason Alexander, who the Woo Sox released. The Woo Sox, not the Red. He was on the Woo Sox. Spencer Spaghetti is hurt. Brandon Walter, another guy the Red Sox let go.
Javier. Hurt.
Christian Javier's back, but he's like not.
He's pitching fully well tonight. Himself
yet. Yeah, he's doing well now, but he's still not like. He might be by in a week from now or 5 days. And then Garcia is hurt, the dancing guy. So
and then
poor guy.
Hater's still hurt too.
Yeah. Hater's hurt. Yeah, they don't have
They said they wanted to get him back for the playoffs, and I stashed him on my fantasy IL and I never looked into it again. I have no idea how his recovery's
I don't think he's gonna be ready. Hold on, let me see.
It kind of in the moment felt like a Roman Anthony thing where it's like, yeah, like we'll try to get him back for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh. Bro, his middle name is Ronald. He's not gonna be ready.
Josh Ronald Hader?
Nah, if his middle name was like Savage, then he'd be ready. But Ronald, he's not going to be ready.
No, no chance. All right, I'm going to give you guys a list of the teams. Okay. So probably not for, I'll list you the teams, but I'm not even going to have the Astros as an option just because I don't think they have any chance of winning that division, of the winning the AL West, and thus being the team the Red Sox would face in the wild card round. So we'll leave them out of this. What I'm going to read you the team names, and I want you guys to tell me at this moment, subject to change, who would you most like to see the Red Sox face in the wild card round, and who would you least like to see the Red Sox face in the wild card round? All right, you ready? Blue Jays, Yankees, Tigers, Guardians, Mariners.
Okay, I'll go first. I think Tigers for sure is who I would like the Red Sox to face. In any round, they're ice cold. They're, if they get in, like I said last episode, it's not going to be a hooray, we did it. It's going to be a whoo, okay, we made it in. That's great. So I would gladly take the Tigers. I know the Red Sox didn't play well against them in the regular season, but I'd gladly take the Tigers. And then
wait for the least. Let's go around and do the most, and then we'll come back around for the least. Pat, do you have a team you'd most want to see them face?
Yeah, I agree with Sammy. I think it's.
Bless you.
I think it's the Tigers. I think I just don't think the lineup's potent enough. The good thing is playing in Detroit. Well, actually, the Sox, whatever. We'll kind of go both sides. If the Sox host that, I don't think the Tigers' offense is potent enough to.
They won't host. They're only playing the Tigers in the first round if the Tigers win.
My thing is, yes. If by whatever, let's say they did play at Comerica, that's like the best stadium for this rotation to pitch in. Like it's contact pitching, young guys. There's some leeway, there's some forgiveness there. But no, I would go Detroit. I don't think they're a good postseason team.
All right, I'm going to differ from you guys here. Because if the with the Tigers, you get Scooble game one, it negates the crochet thing. We talked about it. Also, another thing is if the Red Sox play the Tigers, it means the Tigers got their shit together and won that division. So, yeah, they're limping right now. They may not be limping then if the Red Sox are facing them. The team I would take, and maybe I think a lot of people would disagree with this, I'd take the Blue Jays. That's a they've lost 5 out of 6 right now. They don't have Bo Bichette. Does not seem like they're going to have Bo Bichette in a potential wild card round.
Santander has not been good.
Hold on. I got to back up. I don't think there's any chance the Red Sox. Oh, wait. Yeah, they could. If they get the second wild card and the Blue Jays get the first wild card. Okay, so I stand by it. Yeah, you're right, Sammy. Santander is going to come back, but coming off injury, like it's going to be kind of a, feels like maybe kind of a Willier type deal where maybe you catch him before he kind of gets his footing. Their offense tonight, you look at the lineup top to bottom. It did not. Like, they had maybe, like, the 2-3-4, it was like Varsho, Guerrero, and Kirk. Like, come on. That's doable. Pat?
I would also argue one thing that you didn't mention. I would argue that they had the worst bullpen in the postseason. Jeff Hoffman started so hot. People are like, oh, my God. The Orioles and the Braves are stupid. Look how good he's been. Dog shit. He's been so bad for months. They don't have one guy outside of maybe Louis Varland that you could actually trust out of that bullpen. And with guys if Gausman doesn't have it, like Scherzer's been ass this year. Like if Scherzer doesn't have it, and you have to dig into that and then keep doing it for back-to-back-to-back games, they're fucked.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't, and not to mention talk about hot and cold. Like that's a team that if you play them, it's because they sucked the rest of the way. So I like that matchup. Let's do least team you want to least face, least the team you'd least like to face in the wild card round.
Okay, I think this is unlikely, but I think this is the easiest answer. The one team I do not want to face is the fucking Seattle Mariners. I do not want the Red Sox to play the Seattle Mariners. And here's why. The three things that matter most in the postseason: pitching, starting pitching, of course, home runs win in October, and defense, which is why the Yankees did not win the World Series last year. The Mariners, we all know about their starting pitching. Brian Wu is having a career year. Gilbert's nasty. Kirby's nasty. Castillo, Miller, Evans, Hancock. Good starting pitching, good bullpen as well. But the offense, which has been their bugaboo for years, these guys hit the most tanks. They have Josh Naylor, who has 20 home runs, Polanco, 24, Arozarena, 27, Julio, 31, 47 from Suarez, and 58 from Cal Raleigh. Fuck that. That is the one, and they don't lose at home, too, which is where you'd be playing, on the West Coast. So that's the team I don't want to face. By far, I don't even think it's close. And so starting pitching, home runs, defense, check, 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 all three of those. So no thanks, Mariners.
Pat, I'll slide in and go second because I agree with Sammy. Like Mariners, best roster on paper of all the teams we listed. They're red hot, which a lot of teams on this list are not. And yeah, you don't want to go to Seattle and play in that ballpark where their pitchers dominate. They've got a great lineup. Hit the ball out of the ballpark. Yeah, I agree with everything Sammy said. That's the team right now that scares the shit out of me. Pat, where are you at with it?
I'm going Yankees. And I'm doing so for two reasons. They hit the most home runs. Second off, this is a team that is, which the Mariners do not have. This is a team with so much postseason experience, and they were just in the World Series. You have Judge, who we'll see how it looks with him in the outfield. Like, if there's games where he has to play at Fenway, he's not playing right field.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's no shot with that elbow. Judge has been there. Stanton has been there. Max Fried won a World Series, and he was damn good when they won it. Bellinger won a World Series, had a great season. There are a lot of guys on that team with experience. They hit home runs. The starting rotation is good enough. And that in that ballpark, anything can happen both ways, which I get. But they're just because of the experience, I'm going to say the Yankees.
Pat, I'll tell you, if it wasn't the Mariners for me, it would have been the Yankees. And that's a far cry because even just a few weeks ago, the Yankees would have been towards the top of the list of the teams that I would have wanted to see the Red Sox play. But they're playing good baseball right now, and they have been for some time. And their lineup looks really good. They've got deep pitching on all fronts. And yeah, everything you said. So yeah, they would be second on my list. I just have a deep belief in the Mariners and have for years, and it's killed me in the past, but I'll stand by it. We want to do some Nuff Said before we get on out of here?
Yeah. All right, who's up first? I don't want to go first.
You guys can go first. Enough said. Gordo, you can go first. Stay to look up the exact number.
All right. Mine's just a quick one. Shout out to whoever makes these things. It says Nido on it, but these are like the freaking best stress balls. Oh yeah, Sammy, we were on a video call the other day and I noticed you squeezing one. I forgot to bring it up. Wait, did they just score? A scored? Yeah, A scored up 2-1. Let's go on the Astros. But yeah, shout out because I've been getting some crazy use out of this thing, watching all of the games, all the baseball games for the Red Sox playoffs, for the fantasy baseball finals, for football Sunday. Like, I'm just squeezing this stress ball nonstop. So shout out to whoever makes these things because they're fucking great and they're better than all the other stress balls. But no free ads, and I don't know who makes it. So who's going second?
I have to issue an apology. This is my Nuff Said. Not like a firm apology, but like a, all right, whatever, I'm sorry, apology. Kind of flipped out on Nate Eaton, and then he became like one of the more reliable guys on the Red Sox for like a week or so. So I think he deserved the outrage I gave him. I crashed out. A full-on crashed out. You all saw it. Stand by. It was justified. But Nate Eaton's been good. I don't want people to think I don't like those people who like have a take on a player and then the player proves them wrong or like does something good and they like won't give them credit because they care more about their take. I'm not that guy, pal. Credit to Nate Eaton. I don't give a fuck if I'm right or wrong as long as the Red Sox are winning. So yeah, he's been good. Speed, defense. Less strikeouts. Thanks, Nate.
That's exactly how you should. I don't even want to say that your take aged poorly because it didn't, because he deserved the crash out. But when something like this happens, yeah, I see way too many people who would just try to like find a couple of reasons to say that he still sucks and just roll with it. Like, no, it's okay to give the guy credit. He's played well. And it's also okay to defend the crash out that was deserved because he did cost the Red Sox that game.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And also, if Rob Refsnyder retires after this year, I think Nate Eaton's going to take over that role. So you might have to get used to him. So if you did crash out along with me, I got over it. You can get over it too.
It's weird. It's kind of like a reverse sort of thing. If you flip it, you have a guy who might be headstrong on his take saying he's good, even though he sucks. Kind of reminds me of someone who has this love affiliation for a bullpen guy. He was on the Sox, and then he went away.
Are you talking about Johan Ramirez?
Magically appeared.
If you're talking about Johan Ramirez, I'll have the last laugh.
It's like, yo,
Sammy,
Gordon, you know,
I applaud you times 10 after that.
Well, Joe, I have my own Johan. Gordo, you know who that is, right? My version
Darwin's
of Johan.
In, right?
That's my guy. Darwin's in when he comes back from Korea. Let's see where he's at.
Don't Darwin's while you're looking in. It up, don't think
yeah,
I have
you need a you need a
I forgot.
Heavy,
we
you
are
need a,
doing,
you need a heavy apology now.
We
Sammy.
Are doing a draft of bad players who we think will be good at some point this offseason. That's happening.
Oh, okay. I'm down. He's on the he's on the
what?
Fukuoka. Sorry. Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. So he's in Japan. He's not in Korea. I don't know why I thought he was in Korea, but yeah, he'll be back. Japan.
He'll be back.
They teach command first. So once he reins it in, that crazy left-handed angle and high 90s fastball. Oh my God. I almost feel bad for the rest of the league. So count your blessings until Darwin's in returns.
The stuff was never the issue.
Yeah.
Pat,
Japan.
Enough said.
I have tinfoil hat time. Not Uh-oh. Even a theory, just more of an astute observation on my part. Since July 26th, here are the best three records in the MLB. Brewers 34-20. Phillies. I don't think this has been updated. So as of we are recording on Tuesday night, this has not been updated. Brewers 34-20.
Pat,
Phillies
this is before today? It hasn't been updated. Like it was updated like before the games.
As of Monday,
yes.
Okay.
Brewers 34-20. Phillies 33-20. Guardians 34-21. The Guardians have the best record in the American League since July 26th. Why is that substantial? I'm pulling out the Brian Windhorst finger.
Uh-oh.
Why is that substantial? That just so happened to be the day that they got rid of the guy on the team who was actively trying to lose games.
Oh, that is interesting.
That's a bit peculiar to me, considering they were under 500. When that happened, he was a massive trade piece. They found out that he pulled a shoeless Joe Jackson. They get rid of him, and they promptly go 34-21.
Wait, Pat, so is this Class A or is this Ortiz? Because they got rid of him.
This is Class A. This
is
Class A.
The second one. So once they got the final cancer out of the locker room, they were able to go.
Mm-hmm.
God, can you imagine? Remember when they almost traded Stephen Kwan to the Padres? Just how much easier our lives would have been if they just did that.
Yeah.
Dude, he waved to the fans
in
left field. He was saying goodbye. He thought he was gone. By the way, Stephen Kwan, one of the more under-discussed like fall-offs this year, he's not been he's hitting 277. He's a guy who's supposed to hit like three. He's like a batting average guy. So yeah. I don't know what happened. He's still good, but he's like under 100. Yeah, 99 OPS plus. Yeah, good. Well, yeah, corner out. Yeah, he's still good. Just, you know, I would have, like 2 years ago, I would have swapped Duran for him. Now I'm like, eh.
If I were, granted, I would have been pissed if I were a Padres fan trading LDV for a reliever. But if they traded him for Kwan, I would have been close to as pissed. Because you're right. He's not what he was for that year.
The LDV trade is going to be like one of the worst, like franchise altering moves. Unless the Padres win the 2025, if they win the 2025 World Series, it's all, they win. It's
Reagan's
all,
for Chapman. You're bad. Good.
Yep. Doesn't matter. You got the job done, but I don't think they will. And I think Leo DeVries is going to be a monster in Vegas. He's going to be a superstar because they're going to be in Las Vegas in that stadium when he's up and in his prime. And Padres fans are going to be watching like a 75-win team with no farm system being like, oh, my God, we traded this guy for a reliever who now plays for the Dodgers probably. Fuck. San Diego's nice at least.
Yeah, at least we have Don Orsillo. And we have Don, yeah. And Tatis is locked up.
When it's shady, it's cooler.
We have Xander Bogaerts.
Tatis.
Jackson Merrill.
They just mutter their players' names. All right.
Oh. All right. Let's wrap it up on that. Oh, fingers crossed. Let's have the Sox get a couple more wins before we record next. We appreciate you guys tuning in to episode 268 of Play Tessie. Remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast. Rate 5 stars. Find us on WEI's YouTube channel. Hit the thumbs up on all our videos, which are in the Play Tessie playlist folder. Hit the thumbs up there. Subscribe to WEI. Find us on at Play Tessie on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. You know the drill. Hit the follow button. We've got great content. We had a great year of interviews with the players. Talked about that last episode, but it's been super cool this year. And we've got all our stuff up there. You can check it all out. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it's Gordo. Let's get a crochet win tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.